Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Top of the ninth inning, and Fontenot fires. Ground ball towards Smith. High hop, fielded at shortstop. Throw to first in time. Reed has it. Tigers win! Tigers win! And the road to Omaha certainly comes through Baton Rouge as the Tigers take the NCAA regional. And now we'll lie in wait next week here at the box for the Supers of the NCAA tournament here in 2019.
Go Tigers. What a great day from Tigers.
We're going to get them.
Go Tigers.
Good morning and welcome to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber, 133, 1133 in HD. If you want to call us today, Tiger fans, I know you're excited. You may be a little sleepy. You may be a little grumpy because you didn't get enough sleep. Because for some god-awful reason, LSU was forced to play their last game of the day at 8 o'clock, 8:06, first pitch. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. So, give it up to Southern Miss. They didn't make it easy. The Golden Eagles did come to play. I was a little surprised by that on Saturday night. They were definitely a gritty team, but even though LSU was pushed in their own regional by very game Southern Miss squad, both on Saturday and then on Sunday, LSU found a way to win. LSU found a way to win the regional, didn't drop a single game. It all started back on Friday with what I could describe sitting there inside Alex Box Stadium as batting practice. There would be none of that 2012 nonsense from Stony Brook. LSU made sure of that right off the bat. They absolutely destroyed Stony Brook and made a bit of a statement right off the bat. Landon Marceau was terrific. Has anyone been pitching better for LSU in the last three and a half weeks than Landon Marceau? I don't think so. And Paul Maneri, it surprised a lot of people that he went with Marceau to begin with, the freshman, who had to deal with some struggles, some inconsistencies, not pitching within himself. Finally got that confidence back towards the tail end of the season. Impressive start against Auburn. Impressive start in the SEC tournament. So Paul turns to him because his thought process was it set the tone for this team right off the bat. We mean business. We're going to throw out our best guy. We're not going to try to piecemeal it together. We're not going to try to throw someone out there. We're not going to give it to Mikhail Hilliard or anybody like that and try to save our arms for this regional. No, we're going to go out. We're going to set the tone from Jump Street. Boom. First game of our regional. We're going to win it. We're going to head into the winner's bracket and go from there. Cody Schutz was in the house on that Friday night with Landon Marceau. We'll get to his celebrity and how many people took photos with him, as I requested on Friday. Friday. Marceau set the tone. He was so good. And the bats just were phenomenal. Thump Stony Brook in the opener. It's not even close. It was a damn football score. And then came Saturday. Now, Southern Miss had done the same thing to Arizona State in game one on Friday of the Baton Rouge Regional than LSU would do later that night to Stony Brook, beating by a football score. They mauled Arizona State. That was the big surprise of the regional, was just how good of a team Southern Miss was and the fact they beat up on poor Arizona State. And for the first, until the sixth inning of Saturday's game, it was a pitcher's duel. Henry looked so good. Remember, that was only his second start, a second appearance since having to take more than a month off for arm soreness, LSU star freshman pitcher. He goes out there, he's lights out. Has total command. Southern Miss can't get anything going. I want to say when he left the game, he only had given up two hits. Southern Miss was dealing as well. And then the sixth inning came. And LSU was the road team in Saturday's game. And they exploded for a couple of runs. And you're like, oh, here you go. LSU starting to flex that muscle. Starting to flex that muscle a little bit. But then they brought in Todd Peterson. Peterson gets out of the jam and then comes back out to pitch in the seventh. He got himself into trouble there in the sixth. Gets out of it. He would not get out of that jam there in the seventh. One walk, two hit batters. Loads up the bases. Zach Hess comes in. Grand slam. Boom. Just and a lot of us in the press box are going, here we go. Like, you could just feel it. Like, you were like, here we go. The combination of when Peterson and Hess are on, it's lights out because they have filthy stuff. But, bro, when they are off, oh. Oh. But I give credit to Zach Hess because he gives up the grand slam. And I'll tell you this also. At being at Alex Box Stadium this past weekend, there sure were a whole lot of Southern Miss fans in attendance. There were moments in that Saturday game that they were cheering as loud or louder for their team than LSU fans were. Now, Southern Miss has a good fan base. They travel well. It's not that far of a trip from Hattiesburg to Baton Rouge, so it made it easier. But you heard a lot of chants of USM. So much so that LSU fans got angry and started chanting back LSU. There were no LSU fans chanting after Zach Hess gave up that grand slam to tie the game. Okay? And I can tell you from the writers there in the press box, many of us were doing this. Well, got to scrap that lead. That story that we had started writing on is no good. But I'll give credit, and you have to give credit to Zach Hess. Because he calmed down, he struck out the next two batters. Got out of the jam, got out of the inning. And then he was lights out for the remainder of the game. He picked up the win. Because then the LSU bats turned it around. They pull out the win on Saturday night, LSU does. Antoine Duplantis had his moment tying Eddie Furness's all-time hits record on Friday. He goes hitless. One of the big highlights in Saturday's game, He went 0 for 4. In the ninth, he had an opportunity because, once again, LSU was the visiting team in that scenario. So he comes up to bat again in the ninth, and Southern Miss intentionally walks him. And that didn't go over too well with the fans there at Alex Box Stadium, who promptly booed. And then they intentionally walked Daniel Cabrera. Now, they were doing all the intentional walks to set up the double play. Duplantis would get his history, as we know, yesterday. We'll talk more about that in the next segment. But it sets up LSU advances, like the majority of the SEC teams did over the weekend, by the way. Then comes Southern Miss. And this is what I'll say about this. So Southern Miss, Arizona State have to battle at 2 o'clock on Sunday for the chance to advance and play LSU again last night. Southern Miss was down 12-6 after seven innings. And then they rolled off seven runs over the final two innings for a 13-12 win over Arizona State. It was like, what? Respond from a loss by storming back against Arizona State. Once again, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that many of my writing brethren had to rewrite their game stories for that one. And LSU last night pulls out the win, but they had their hands full. Southern Miss did not go quietly into the night. Eric Walker looked good early. If you're an LSU fan, not only are you happy because you won the regional, but I'm going to ask you this, Cody Schutz. You have to be happy with what you saw from your starting pitching, Marceau, Henry, and Walker over the weekend as well, because they looked good.
Yeah, I don't know. I already hear too much complaining from you. I don't know what. Too much negativity from you. You should be singing from the mountaintops, Raymond. LSU wins. They're hosting. I hear too much. Meh. Bad start. Grand slam talk. Who cares about all that, Raymond? LSU wins the regional, and they get to host the super regional. We should be singing.
I asked you a direct question. I asked you a direct question, fanboy. Calm down. What did you think of the pitching? Because pitching has been an issue. It was good.
Did they lose this weekend?
It's going to be one of those days, is it? It's going to be one of those days. Okay.
Did LSU lose this weekend?
No.
Then the pitching was very good.
Okay.
I don't know what, I mean, that's my breakdown of the pitching. It was very good.
The pitching's been very good, and they've lost throughout the season. And the starting pitching.
The pitching has been very suspect. The pitching hasn't been very good throughout the season. The pitching has been questionable at best.
Okay. My point is they've won games with questionable starting pitching, have they not, all year long?
They did, but my point is this weekend it wasn't. That wasn't the case. Zach Hess was there. No, maybe Matthew Beck had the, I don't know. Between Zach Hess and Matthew Beck, they had probably the toughest time on the mound this weekend. One of those two guys. Zach Hess, because of that one pitch. Matthew Beck, because of like two back-to-back walks that struggled, that gave up some stuff.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, everybody else, I mean, they against some good postseason teams, I mean, they made Stony Brook look silly.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then, I mean, everybody else, the pitching was great. There was no, I mean, I thought it was, I don't.
Thank you. What I was trying to drive at, Cody, was question marks have been about the starting pitching for how long? 2 months?
The whole season.
Thank you. You get a terrific performance from Landon Marceau.
Right.
You get a terrific performance from Cole Henry, who right. looked rough his first time out after being on the shelf for arm soreness for a month.
Right.
And you got Eric. There has not been a time this whole season that all three of those guys pitched in a three-game period, in a three-day period, that they all looked really good. That's my point. If you're an LSU fan,
that's what I said it was really good.
You have to be.
I said it was really good.
Oh, we got to hit a break.
What do you want? I said it was really good.
Cody Schuch bringing that next level.
I'm confused. I don't know. I it feels like you repeated back to me what I said.
When we come back here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game, we'll talk about more LSU baseball. Having a very good weekend, obviously, because they won the regional, obviously, Schuch. And Antoine Duplantis moving Eddie Furness away, out of the way, and now he's the all-time hit king for the Tigers. We'll talk more about that right here on 103.7 The Game.
Duplantis playing in his 267th game as a Fighting Tiger, and there it is, number 353. Line drive up the middle, drops into center field, and Tiger fans on their feet. As Antoine Duplantis is now the all-time career hit leader here for LSU.
What a moment.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Give us a call on Narco Equipment Hotline 337-706-0111. Cody and I promise that we will be on the same page moving
forward. Am I allowed to complain again? Because after hearing that highlight, I would like to complain that, you know, Antoine, I was in the crowd on Friday.
Oh, there it is.
If you were going to go ahead and go 0-for on Saturday, you should have went ahead.
I was there too.
You should have went ahead and got the base hit. You know, if I'm going to complain this morning, let me continue to complain and let me take a shot at the all-time hit leader at LSU. Why you not going to do it on Friday, bruh? Anyways, I was there, bro. I had the phone ready. I was like, man, 103.7 The Game Twitter is going to be lit, yo. And it was not.
The phone started coming out when he tied the record on Friday.
Right.
And then didn't he have one more at bat Friday night, and he didn't get the hit, right? He didn't break the record. He had that one final at bat on Friday night,
Have been, might have been the last inning, yeah.
Yeah. So then Saturday comes. So he just, right, Saturday, he just needs the one hit. That he just needs to break. So every guy in the press box, I'm not going to lie, I'm up in the press box, and every cat in the press box has got their phone up. Cody,
no one's actually watching the game.
They're waiting for Duplantis to come back, and they're like, here we go. Here we go. And they record.
Instead of radar guns, it's cell phone cameras.
Dozen damn cell phone cameras in the press box recording the moment that they're hoping that Duplantis breaks the record. And he didn't on Saturday. And but one of the – I'm going to say something. Cody, is this cat is the all-time hits record now for LSU. You could argue the most storied or one of the top three most storied baseball programs in college history.
Yeah, I'd say top three for sure.
Top three for sure. You can make the argument for number one. Yet it still feels weird with him where when you think of LSU greats.
You already know the answer to your own question, but continue to set me up. I know the answer to this.
Do you think of Antoine Duplantis? Does he spring to mind? Or is he just one of those cats that's kind of under the radar guys?
I'm going to use the word era here in this explanation. I think a lot of people are going to agree with me, and I think you feel the same way. There is a distinct line between the Gorilla Ball era and the BB Corps era of baseball, college baseball. There is a distinct line. Like some sports, you have to look at, like, where is that? Where, you know, in the NFL. Where exactly did the game shift to becoming pass happy and quarterback? And yes, I know there are some, you know, very NFL historians or football historians that can pinpoint probably exactly when, but blah, blah, blah. You get my point. Is sometimes there's these shifts in sports that you may not quite notice. They happen gradually over the course of years.
Here's not the case.
College baseball, it was 1 year. It was an off season, and then boom, the game is now different.
And it caused parity across because of that,
right.
The change. It calls parity also, and you and I have talked about this before, is universities, athletic departments committing money, resources right. to baseball as an actual legitimate sport. So you get that's caused a lot of parity as right. well. But yes, there's that division line. The Gorilla Ball era of Skip Bertman.
Right. And when they and they didn't even get it right immediately when they tried to change the bats, because then they went to change the laces on the balls and they moved the seams back. And so, like, there was a lot of moving parts, but there's a very easy spot to look at and say, this is where college baseball changed. And if you go from that line forward, I'd say Antoine Duplantis is probably the third best Tiger maybe to come through behind Alex Bregman. Well, probably the fourth best, let me say, behind Alex Bregman, Aaron Nola, and DJ LeMahieu. And the only reason I say DJ LeMahieu is just because of the career that he's gone on to have in the major leagues.
You didn't go with Mikey.
No, DJ LeMahieu has multiple Silver Slugger awards, multiple batting titles in the American League, National League for the Rockies. The kid is a stud in the MLB. Alex Bregman obviously doing his thing, and Aaron Nola, I think, has got a huge career ahead of him. But since that era there, I'm going to say Antoine Duplantis is, yes, a very, very great Tiger. But then when you go back to the years of Blair Barbier and Eddie Furness and Brad Cressy and Ryan Terrio and Mike Fontenot and Brian Moore playing first base and those type of guys, then, I mean, no, he doesn't. But he's not even the same type of player as those guys. I don't think he would want you to compare him to those guys.
And the thing about Duplantis is you could also make the argument from time to time, even on this year's squad, Josh Smith has been better.
I kind of think Daniel Cabrera is the best player on the team. He just always...
He's just had slumps this year at the plate.
But I think if you look at talent, I got to go Cabrera, I think.
Watson? I mean, there's a lot of guys on this team.
If Saul Garza keeps hitting the ball, watch out.
Did you hear... What I love, like, he used to, like, kill rattlesnakes and send pictures of them to Paul Maneri.
Of course he does.
He told that in the presser. I was like, what?
Biting snakes' heads off and stuff.
Paul Maneri's like, well, if he can kill rattlesnakes like that, he can handle coming to LSU, sure. Saul Garza had himself a hell of a weekend. He's had a hell of a last 3 weeks.
That, like, 7,000.
So LSU, Duplantis, congratulations to him. LSU's all-time hit king. LSU wins the Baton Rouge Regional. They will now host Florida State because the Seminoles went into Athens and said, hey, guess what, Georgia?
Can you promise me a segment where we make fun of Georgia? Can you promise me that?
Oh, yeah. Well, that'll be coming up in the second hour.
Yes.
You're the four seed, bruh. You're the four. You're the national. Now, they weren't the only national seed that lost, okay? They're home
Angry
regionals.
Beavers.
Oregon State, the defending national champs, did too. So we'll dive into that matchup with Florida State later on the show. Coming up next, some NBA Finals talk right here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game.
Throws cross court to Livingston. Good catch. Goes to Andre. He's open. Launches a three. Buried it! He buried it with 5.9 to go. Clutch shot by Andre Iguodala.
And there, he absolutely saved this game.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. NBA Finals Game 2 was last night as well. Golden State Warriors win 109-104 to even that series at one game apiece. You heard in the clip there, Andre Iguodala. Iggy coming up big because, well, that's kind of what he does.
And now we can each enjoy celebrating another birthday before they tip off again.
Iggy only had 8 points, but he had 6 assists, 8 rebounds, played 28 minutes. They needed him. It was a weird game. You know, Steph Curry, 23 points. Klay Thompson had 25, but Klay got banged up in that game. Got injured, had to leave the game. So they needed other guys to step up. Sean Livingston dropped in 6 points. Quinn Cook, 9 points. As I said, Iggy had 8. Even DeMarcus Cousins played 28 minutes last night, had 11 points and 10 rebounds with 6 assists. Draymond Green, though, was kind of setting the tone, almost had a triple-double, 17, 10, and 9. They got the job done, even had 6 points from, Bogut. The Raptors, meanwhile, Kawhi Leonard tried to carry the team. He had 34 points and 14 rebounds, but Kyle Lowry, who only scored 7 points in game one, only had 13 in game two. Danny Green, the veteran, who was part of that San Antonio trade to Toronto, he only had 8. Van Fleet came off the bench 38 minutes, 17 points. That's what you want to see. You'd like to see more points and productions from Ibaka. He only had 7 points, 10 rebounds in 16 minutes. Gasol was not a factor, only 6-6. So it's an even series, but I'm intrigued by this because the Raptors, none of their role players really stepped up. It was Kawhi Leonard. Siakam came back down to earth. He only had 12 points. Gasol, Ibaka, Danny Green, they weren't really effective. Toronto did have Van Fleet, but it was essentially Kawhi Leonard. The rest of the bench didn't step up like they needed to. And yet, Toronto still had a chance to win this game. And now moving forward, what's the extent of Klay Thompson's injury? How hobbled is he going to be? Is Kevin Durant going to come back? Don't be surprised if you see the Toronto Raptors go on the road and win a game in Oakland. I just think this is the most vulnerable Warriors team we've seen in this stretch, and it's due to injuries. It's due to injuries, and it's due to depth. They still got Steph Curry. They're having Iggy out there play big minutes, making big shots. They're the veteran team. They've won all the championships. They're trying to go for the three-peat. But it's not going to be easy for them. Kawhi Leonard's not going to make it easy for them. And if those other cats for Toronto, who had an off night, they shot terrible from the field, no one else really stepped up besides Leonard and Van Fleet, yet they nearly still had a chance to win. They still had a chance to win last night's game, to take a 2-0 lead. Golden State will get a bit of a boost going back to Oakland, playing inside Oracle in front of the home crowd there in Oakland. But Kawhi Leonard knows how to lead a team to win on the road in the playoffs. He's done it before, many times. I mean, that's my takeaway. And how hurt is Klay Thompson? I mean, not only did the Warriors had Klay Thompson and Kevin Looney both lead the game last night's game due to injury, and Durant's still on the mend. Can the Golden State Warriors win the NBA Finals without Kevin Durant and a hobbled Klay Thompson? I don't know. You still would think, with having the veteran coach, a guy that's so savvy in Steve Kerr, a guy who knows about winning 3 championships in a row, by the way. Shout out to the 1990 Chicago Bulls. He's been here before. He knows how to do this. This is a veteran team. They know what is at stake. They know that they have their dynasty on the line here. But can you depend on Iggy to step up like he did last night for the rest of the series if Klay Thompson is hobbled? If they don't get Durant back? And what if they do get Durant back? They're not even letting Durant, reports are, do cardio drills. How the hell is he going to play basketball? Toronto had the Warriors on the ropes. They just couldn't end it. Golden State pulls out the game 2 win. Like I said, Klay went out in the fourth quarter with a hamstring injury. Ooh. And that's the thing that worries me about Klay. Hammies need time to heal. That's not a situation where Klay Thompson goes back to the locker room, they give him a shot, and he's good to go for the next game. He's going to need some time. Will he be ready to go for game 3 on Wednesday night?
Luckily, he's got 4.5 years. I think he'll be fine, Raymond.
That is such BS, isn't it? Making us wait that long.
I'm only barely joking. I'm only barely joking. He's got forever.
You may be giving people a glimpse into what the rant will be on Friday. Because by that time, we'll have only played three games.
Three games! This started last week.
Oh, Yes, you'll have plenty of time to recover because the next game won't happen until 2020. So we don't know about Durant's status for Game 3 yet. We'll find out in the next couple days, obviously.
Can I say, I'll eat my crow where I deserve it. I was wrong. I remember I put my foot down, stuck my fork in the ground, and was like, Kevin Durant is going to play. He's made the trip. They're down a game. He's there. He's going to play. And I was wrong. They won 2, and he didn't play, so I'll eat my crow.
He may play Game 3. Because with Clay's injury, it being a hammy, if Kevin Durant can go, because here's the thing, if you're Golden State, right? Let's say Toronto comes in there and takes Game 3 on Wednesday night. Now they have a 2-1 series lead, and you have two of your players injured. Somebody's going to have to play through the pain. Remember, Kawhi Leonard is an NBA Finals MVP. He's won a world championship. I understand Toronto hasn't been here before, but they do have a lot of veteran guys. Ibaka played in an NBA Finals. Remember, he was a member of the Oklahoma City Thunder that lost to the Miami Heat. He's been on this stage before. They have veteran guys, okay, that aren't going to be rattled. If Golden State is healthy, Toronto can't beat them. But they're not healthy. Now, in addition to Kevin Durant being hobbled and still has yet to play in this NBA Finals, now you have Klay Thompson going out with a hamstring injury and Kevin Looney out with a chest contusion. And apparently Steph Curry's been under the weather with flu-like symptoms. Yet they still found a way to produce a 20-0 run. Ridiculous in the second and third quarters. That was very much vintage Golden State when they went on that run. And despite that, Toronto still had a chance. Boogie did look pretty good playing for them, for the Warriors. Can he keep that up? If he can keep that up, that gives them a different dynamic. Maybe you won't see the Golden State Warriors that we've all been accustomed to watching in the finals. Maybe it's a little bit different. If there's no Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson's injured, do you see more Boogie Cousins out there? Both him and Bogut both played last night. They went big. They went big against Toronto. I think the key for me, though, moving forward, if Golden State's going to win this series, it's going to be Draymond Green. I know he's a polarizing figure. He's a guy that gets after it. If he's on your team, you love him. If you're playing against him, you hate him. He's that kind of cat, but you got to respect him because what he brings to the game, what he brings to the table, toughness, grit, does all the dirty work, amps him up, gets him pumped up. He's very much the vocal leader. He's the guy that lights them up. He'll go after his own damn teammates. He's done it before. He doesn't care. He's been very good so far in the first two games of this NBA Finals.
He plays the heel very well. Because I have a hard time believing Draymond Green is actually that type of guy. He seems like actually a really cool guy. He seems like somebody that if you got a beer in him, he would have a good time with you. But when he's on the court, he plays the heel perfectly for that
team. He turns it on. When the lights are on, you're right. He turns on full heel mode, and he is going to go after you and everything else. He will talk junk all day long.
He's looking for a technical foul. Like, please tee me up.
But with Durant injured, Steph under the weather, and now Klay injured with a hamstring injury, I think you're going to see Draymond Green be the one to lead the Golden State Warriors to their third straight NBA championship. We'll host the Larry O'Brien Trophy for a third straight year. If the Warriors are going to win, I think it's going to be on the back of Draymond Green. And that's a weird thing to say because of how many talented shooters and offensive players they have. But Draymond makes them go, and you saw it last night. Iggy came up big, but Steph under the weather and Klay out of the game. Draymond Green set the tone, nearly got himself a triple-double. If the Warriors win this championship, don't be surprised if Draymond Green's your NBA Finals MVP. Put it on the board. After game two, that's what I say. And if Toronto wins, it's going to be no one else but Kawhi Leonard. Let's just be honest. He's the best player. He's the best player on the court. So, and he plays for Toronto. So if the Raptors are going to have a chance to win, Kawhi is going to have to carry them. And those other guys are going to have to step up. You don't need them to drop 24 points. But damn it, Kyle Lowry. You got to do something. Oh, you got to be better, man. Come on. It's the NBA Finals. Get a chance to win a world championship. Step up. Step up. Would it kill you to drop 20 in a game? Come on. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll wrap up the first hour right here on 103.7 The Game.
I'm not the type to work in a bank. I'm no good slapping on paint. Don't have a knack for making motors crank, no. But I'm pretty good at drinking beer. So hand me one more, that's what I'm here for. I'm built for having a ball. I love the nightlife, I love my Bud Light. I like them cold and tall.
Outstanding.
It's not 6:50 in the morning. Who cares? It's Louisiana, right?
Someone's drinking right now at 6:50 in the morning.
Hey,
I can guarantee you
shift
that.
Shift work is a thing. Somebody's evening is just starting.
That is correct, sir.
But Billy Carrington, he gets it.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game.
Whatever could this segment be about?
We did not get a chance to dive into this on Friday because the announcement came down after we were already off the air. But the Southeastern Conference decided to finally lift its ban on alcohol sales.
Beer is every place
that allows schools to decide on selling beer and wine at on-campus venues.
Does anybody have a cold beer for Steve Austin?
I'm pretty sure North Texas, where Stone Cold went to, probably allowed beer in the stands.
Oh, hell yeah.
The ban on alcohol in general seating areas has been in place for about 3 decades. So the entire lifetime of Cody Schutz, Cody has never been able to experience not drinking.
Not one time. Well, not legally.
Not legally. Can't go to the concession stand and get alcohol.
Beer.
Greg Sankey made the announcement, the SEC commissioner, on Friday. Here's the rules, though, for the SEC alcohol policy. It's beer and wine only. Okay? So you can't go get you a Cap and Coke. Okay? Or Crown and Coke.
But you can get you
Coors, the banquet beer.
Yes, you may, sir. Yes, you may.
It'd nice be amazing bravo. If you type beer into the search bar. And it's amazing what you'll find.
I don't always drink beer, but when I do, I prefer those Zackies.
Now, if you're LSU, you got to have some Abita on tap, right?
Oh, you would think, right?
I would.
If you can't get Purple Haze at an LSU football game,
that just seems tailor.
Shame on
perfect.
Shame on you.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So here are your rules, though, for the SEC alcohol policy.
This is actually important.
Beer and wine only. Sales end. This is when sales end. If you're listening, go ahead and write this down. You'll need to know. For football, beer and wine sales will end at the end of third quarter. Men's basketball, the second half at the 12-minute timeout mark.
See, that's scary because that can be anywhere from the 12th minute to like the 4th minute left in the game. Like, if that ball doesn't go out of bounds, beer's open. Beer's a flowing.
Women's basketball is the end of the third quarter. Baseball. Right there at Alex Box Stadium, will be the end of the top of the 7th. Ooh, they letting it go.
So the middle of the 7th, they're going to shut it down.
7th inning stretch, you won't be able to get
it. Yeah, there it is. When Take Me Out of the Ball Game plays, they're closing it down.
So before the 7th inning stretch, you better go and make that last run to the concession stand.
I wonder what the getting in line policy is going to be. Can you be in line before the top of the 7th, or can you?
Yeah, and I'd love to see who the hell's going to enforce that.
Who's going to be the little old lady checking tickets at Tiger Stadium, making sure no one's in line?
Oh, you in line?
You know good and well they're going to see people walking by going to the bathroom during the 7-inning stretch. Hey, you good? You sure you don't need a beer? Come on down. We'll take care of you. Oh, you were in line, honey. Don't worry about
it. Yeah, you were.
Yeah, I know. You know exactly how that's going to go down. So 7th as the end of the top of the 7th for baseball, softball end of the top of the 5th. And other sports, no later than when 75% of event time has been completed.
So that'd be like the women's soccer game. There's 90 minutes total in that.
Yeah.
If you could figure out what the minute mark is for 75% of 90, that would be when they would stop.
Now, our boy Connor O'Gara tweeted something out the other day, and I have to say it. This is what he tweeted. He said, "We'll look back at not being allowed to sell alcohol in college stadiums the same way we look back at letting media outlets decide national champions." It's a fair point.
The dark ages.
So, Cody Schuetz, I already think I know how you feel about this. Are you excited about alcohol sales now being allowed inside the stadiums there for the Southeastern Conference? Because, by the way, you could do it here at UL.
Yeah, you can do it everywhere. Southland games, Sunbelt games. It was not a problem. Me and my dad were actually, as we were drinking in the little corner of Alec Box Stadium on Friday, we were enjoying a beer in the little white tent.
Yes.
We were discussing how you won't have to do this, you know, in August. There'll be, you know, be free range, so to speak. And we were talking about how I think a lot of people share the same outlook, as in that gets rid of the, oh, you've got that pint in your back pocket when you're walking up to the game. You better hurry up and kill the rest of that thing before you get in there, or put a beer in every pocket for your walk to the stadium. And then when you get there, shotgun all of them before you go in. I think all that goes down the drain a little bit. You're still going to have your people that are just out there to do it because that's what they do.
You're still going to have your people that collect the airplane version of alcohol and save all those little mini bottles.
Right. I'm just not that cool.
It's not
my thing. But I'm very, very excited for this because it's been too long coming now, especially for the SEC. I get why they did it, but no longer I didn't think it needed to be a thing.
And the new athletic director, Woodward, has already said that he's fully embraced this. This is going to be something.
Well, he was a student, right? He was mad when he went here.
So LSU will probably be the first SEC school to pounce on this. So we'll throw it up on the Twitter poll question. Real simple, guys. On the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. Are you excited about being able to buy beer and wine inside
any facility? LSU athletics.
All LSU. Cody's better with words than I am. He'll put it together.
That's fine. Just go click yes.
To go vote on that. First hour's in the books. Second hour coming up right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schuetz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me thanks drafted you, and they're looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the second hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III. My guy, my navigator, my producer extraordinaire, the man behind the glass, the man behind the man, Cody freaking Schuetz. That's right. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Feel free. Pick up the phone. Give us a call. Narco Equipment Hotline 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. If you want to talk to us about LSU baseball, that's what we led off the show with, and that's what we're going to circle back to right now. Tigers take care of business. Tigers take care of business. They win all three of their games at the Baton Rouge Regional. They rout Stony Brook on Friday. They take care of business. They give up a lead to Southern Miss on Saturday, but then respond. Zach Hess, after giving up the Grand Slam, was tremendous the rest of Saturday. They had their hands full again Sunday night, but they take care of business. They find a way to win the game. They win the Baton Rouge Regional. Now they will host Florida State in the Supers. The reason why LSU, despite being the 13th national seed, gets to host in the Super Regional round is because them dogs.
Georgia sucks. They don't suck, but they had a bad weekend.
Florida State just abused them, dude. Just said, no, we're taking your regional.
Right. Not to sidetrack you here, but over under on how many pictures we get of Mike Martin and Skip Bertman over the next week just shoved in our... I mean, if they ever took a picture together, ever, you will see it 8 trillion times between now and this next weekend.
The baseball coach with the most wins...
ever.
Ever has never won the College World Series.
Nope.
I will say this. I love what I've seen out of LSU from the SEC tournament, from the Auburn series, SEC tournament, and now in the regional. We talked about it in the first segment of today's show about the starting pitching. That was the first time this year. That's the first time this season that you could argue that you saw all three starting pitchers, essentially a weekend rotation, all step up and pitch extremely well. More so on Friday, Cole Henry looked really good on Saturday. And then Sunday, Eric Walker brought him home.
Hey, here's another question. You're talking about pitching right now. On the back end, it seems like this can be taken, it can be good or bad, because it's nice to have three guys on the back end of your bullpen that you do sort of feel like you can go to with the game on the line. But then it also is like, are you going to be able to pick that right guy in that right moment? And I'm talking about Zach Hess, Todd Peterson, and Devin Fontenot. All three of these guys at one point or another this season have spent time as the closer, in air quotes, for LSU. Well, in this regional tournament, in these Southern Miss games, they would go to Todd Peterson. And I'm like, you know what? I feel good about this. Peterson's on the mound. He's going to do it, you know? And then maybe it doesn't work out. They go to Zach Hess. Okay, now we got our guy on the mound. He's you know, best we got. He's going to do it. He gives up the grand slam, but then he shuts it down after that. Last night, they go to Devin Fontenot with 6 outs left to get. And I'm confident again because I'm like, you know what? Fontenot's also been in situations like this throughout the season. Maybe he hasn't performed every time, but he's been there. He's done his thing, and I feel like he can do it again. And so what I'm asking is, is it a blessing or a curse that Paul Maneri right now seemingly has three guys that he can go to in crucial moments towards the end of a ball game, but maybe you don't know exactly which one of those three is the guy you need to go get today?
It's an interesting question because there's yet to be a time in a weekend series, or take it for the regional, where all three of them pitch well.
Right.
So you don't know what you're going to get. I mean,
nice to have backup, but you don't.
Right. Yeah.
It's a weird situation.
The guy with the best stuff is Hess.
Yeah. I agree.
Okay.
I agree.
And you saw it again on Saturday. Now, to defend him, and I've been critical of Zach Hess on this show, that was a really good pitch he threw.
That's what Ben McDonald was saying. The dude genuflected a grand slam. He was on one knee when he hit it.
That was the pitch that you were supposed to throw in that spot. The cat from Southern Miss just hit a really good pitch and sailed it into the right field bleachers. And the other thing that I like about Zach Hess, he was there post-game, owned it. And he had that great quote, though, where he said, they asked him, we're in the media tent, and we asked him, you know, what was going through your mind after you gave up the grand slam? And he said something, and he's like, he was hoping that the offense would bail him out and everything like that. That way no one would burn down his house in Baton Rouge on Saturday night.
Well, so, I mean, you know what? He's speaking candidly, I guess.
So Zach knows that he's fallen short, and he knows that,
I don't want a brick thrown through my window. Let me go ahead and get this guy out.
My man brought to the table, I didn't want someone to set fire to my home. Okay, is what the first thought. Now, you know, he's
who said there's any pressure playing for LSU baseball, right?
God. And you know those cats feel it even more living there. But I loved how Zach responded. Was striking out the next two batters, right? So he gives up the grand slam. Now, the three runs, three of those runs aren't on him. Those are on Peterson. So it was the perfect storm. And that's what you're going to get with Todd, though, right? You're going to get – we talked about it in the press box. In the sixth inning, strikeout, walk. Walk, strikeout.
Devin Fontenot feels the same. So I was nervous last night when he came in, and he put himself in a bit of a jam, but then got himself out of it. So it's
and Hess is not the walks necessarily. Hess is strikeout, home run.
Yeah, that's the thing with him. Yeah,
right. So
or hit batter. Seems like he hits a lot of guys.
Yeah. So they're immensely talented. The trio of Peterson, Hess, and Fontenot. And they each bring something different. Hess has got the best stuff. It's the most filth.
They all throw 96.
They all throw heat. So, but here's the thing. The bullpen fell short Saturday night. They still won. Because Hess was able to close. As soon as he gave up the home run, he shut it down. It's like he calmed it down, and then he just marched right through and picked up the win. Fontenot found a way to get out of the jam, right? So, I think if you're Maneri, I think it's just situational. I think that's what it's going to be against Florida State.
Is this when it comes to Coach Maneri's been coaching baseball for a million years, and it's the feel of the game at this point, and that's kind of where it comes to managing your ball club as opposed to coaching your ball club?
Now, you know, and he was honest with Peterson, too. He said it in the press conference on Saturday night that he told Todd, it's like, look, you can't put us in those kind of situations. But it is interesting to see, you know, I think you can deal with the bullpen issues because it seems like your starting pitching has solidified. They're healthy and they're going. I'll be interesting to see who they throw out there to start the Super Regional. Is it going to be Marceau?
I think
it's probably going to be Landon Marceau. We'll find out probably later today or at the latest tomorrow what the starting rotation is going to be for this weekend's
I'll hedge our bets, and I'll say Wednesday at the extreme latest.
Extreme latest. Let's head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on Doug. Doug, good morning to you, brother. How are you?
Good morning, Ray. Look, you're exactly right. The Tigers are just not being consistent enough. I wouldn't say that the pitching was all that great. I would say the batting was pretty good. Todd Peterson, I mean, that was a shock. I mean, I didn't anticipate that. I didn't think he was going to load the bases. But Hess giving up that grand slam, you got to give it to the Southern batter. I mean, he was down on one knee practically when he hit that ball. You know what I mean? That was just one of those things. You just got to give it to Southern on that. But, I mean, the LSU bat, to come back and give them that win, their offense, and give it to Duke. I mean, what a blessing he is. You know, things are going to get a little bit harder now. I mean, you know, it's not going to get any easier. So the Tigers are going to have to put it together. They're going to have to put it together, Ray.
I appreciate the phone call, Doug. I agree because Florida State's not Southern Miss.
No.
Okay, and
they're riding the Big Mo.
And they went into Athens and curb stomped the host team. Once, but twice.
It wasn't close.
And Georgia took 2 of 3 from LSU during the season. Now, I know that was earlier in the season. That was part of the ebb and flow. I get that. But Florida State is not going to be intimidated by the Alex Box Stadium crowd. They're not going to be intimidated by seeing Tigers written on the front of those jerseys and seeing the gold or the purple or the white or whatever they decide to wear.
Ooh, I hope the pinstripes.
Ooh, the pinstripes are nice.
They get to choose.
They do get to choose. Aren't you glad, though, LSU, that Florida State, which was projected to be in your regional for about 2 weeks, ended up not being in your regional, and they took down... They took down UGA. It's going to be a knockdown drag out. But during the Supers, they were able to get away with having some bullpen issues against the likes of Southern Miss. Won't be able to have that against Florida State. Because Florida State will make you pay. The Seminoles will make you pay.
mini trivia question for you, Raymond, pertaining to...
Ooh, I love trivia.
It's a recent one pertaining to the regional here. I will tell you that in the Baton Rouge Regional, the most outstanding player award was given to two gentlemen. There were co-most outstanding players. One was the little guy that everyone said, and I keep saying, reminded them of a left-handed Jose Altuve, Gabe Montenegro. He's getting the nod. He is one. But an LSU Tiger was also recognized as the co-most outstanding player. Want to take a shot in the dark? It's not a pitcher.
For LSU, Josh Smith?
Saul Garza.
Oh, Garza. Garza. It's a good... He did have a phenomenal regional.
And that leads me to something else I want to bring up. Because Saul Garza, we've seen come along, what, since the second to last regular season series?
The best hitters on this team have come on in the last month.
Well, let me ask you about one of the team's hitters that I'm going to say is not at all, not up there as one of the top tier hitters on the team. But we have seen, at least in my eyes, him produce base hits and get on base and make things happen. We've seen him lay down bunts. We've seen him steal bases. I'm talking about Brant Broussard.
Career homer on Friday.
Right. I feel like he has brought something to this team in that second base position that with Chris Reed at first, Cade Beloso DHing, Brant Broussard playing second and contributing in the batting lineup, I feel like maybe, just maybe, that we've stumbled onto the lineup that can bring this team back to Omaha and possibly to the top of the hill. Just your thoughts on Brant Broussard and his performance here in the SEC tournament and in the regional. I think it's been outstanding.
I think Broussard played extremely at a high level. He's had a good towards the end of the year, and that's why we said
he's played good
multiple hitters.
Though.
The lineup has been up and down all year. We've talked about that, right? Duplantis has been up and down. Zach Watson has been up and down. Daniel Cabrera's had a down year.
Duplantis did not make the all-tournament team.
Correct.
So,
but guys that have been coming on of late for LSU, Garza, Josh Smith, Brant Broussard.
Zach Watson.
So now you have a lineup where you look at it.
Not to mention Cade Beloso.
Freshman, by the way.
First freshman since that line of demarcation we discussed earlier in the show where they changed to the BB Corps bats. First freshman to hit double-digit home runs.
Correct. He hit his 10th home run of the season over the weekend since 1992. Here are the LSU baseball freshmen to reach double-digit home runs. Todd Walker in 92, he hit 12.
Yep. His name is on the wall. His jersey's retired.
Yeah, his jersey's retired. Blair Barbier.
Stud.
97, he hit 15. Oh, that's a lot.
Corner infielder.
Cedric Harris in 98.
Remember that name? Blast from the past. He was a big hinch fella.
Hit 10. And Mike Fondo in 2000. 17. Yeah. The last time.
He's got World Series rings.
Yeah, 17. The last cat to hit double-digit home runs as a freshman was Mike Fondo. That was 19 years ago. It's almost two decades since an LSU freshman hit double-digit home runs. That's a big fella.
I love it. I mean, this team right now, I don't want to get too excited because I have a tendency to do that as an LSU fan, but I think it's very safe to say that this team is playing their best baseball.
I would agree.
At the right time.
Last 3 weeks, after they had the misery and the sky was falling and Tech had beaten them at home for the first time in
lost five in 30 a row.
Years, and Ole Miss beat them in Baton Rouge for the first time since Reagan was president.
Needed a three-run home run from Duplantis to avoid a sweep to Arkansas.
Okay, but that Arkansas we talked about on there, I said that Arkansas game seems like it's a turning point.
If there was going to be one, you said that would be it, and there seems to have been a turning point.
And they're moving on. We'll talk more NCAA baseball because not all of the host teams were able to advance. We'll dissect and that also give a little credit to terrific runs that came to an end for other in-state schools, McNeese State and the Southern Jaguars. When we come back here on RP3 Company on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company, right here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1, that's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on the LUS Fiber, 133, 1133. Before the break, we were talking about LSU baseball. They took care of business, won the Baton Rouge Regional. They now advance to the Supers, where they will host Florida State. Why Florida State? How did LSU, as a 13 national seed, end up hosting a Super Regionals? I'll tell you why. Because this past weekend was upset weekend for the NCAA Regionals. A couple regionals still have to be decided. The nation's number one overall team, the Bruins of UCLA, have to play another game tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern. They have to take on Loyola Marymount, who they defeated yesterday to advance. Now, Loyola Marymount beat them earlier in their own regional. So UCLA is being tested and pushed. They're the number one team in the country. They will face the winner of the 16-seed regional, Oregon State, the defending national champs. They were ousted. They didn't even make it to Sunday. Bye, Felicia.
Those are some angry beavers.
Woo, angry beavers. Michigan and Creighton, the 2-3 seeds in that regional, they'll face off tonight to decide who wins that. So the 1-16 matchup in the Super still hasn't been decided. Oklahoma State regional hasn't been decided either. The Oklahoma City regional. Oklahoma State has to take on UConn because UConn eliminated Nebraska and then beat Oklahoma State last night to push another game. So the host team there is in trouble. Texas Tech took care of business out of Lubbock. They're a very sneaky team. Watch out for the Red Raiders. They could win the whole thing this year. Kind of an under-the-radar national seed. Arkansas defeated the Fighting Cody Schutzes.
Frogs put up a good fight, though.
The Frogs did put up a good fight.
They weren't even supposed to make it to the postseason.
That's correct.
They got there, did good. Arkansas's good, too.
Arkansas advanced to the Supers. Ole Miss advanced to the Supers. So you'll have Fayetteville Super Regional between Arkansas and Ole Miss, all SEC there. We know LSU advanced. And they will be hosting Florida State, who won the Athens Regional, hosted by number 4 Georgia. Florida State beat Georgia 12-3 and then again 10-1. Wow. That's going to be a hell of a Super Regional at Alex Box Stadium this coming weekend.
My arm's going to be tired from chopping.
There it is. Vandy, the number 2 team, number 2 seed nationally, they took care of business. No problem there. They didn't drop a game. They won their own regional. You have to give a big up to McNeese State. They won the conference tournament, the Southland Conference Tournament Championship for the first time since 2003. They got themselves to a regional. They lost a tough game to Indiana State on Friday in the opener, 6-5. And they had a chance to win that game, and then they nearly won their second game there. They were eliminated. They fell just short, losing 9-8 in 13 innings, Cody, to Ohio State, the Big Ten Tournament Champion. McNeese State was eliminated after 2 games, but they showed a lot of fight, losing only 6-5 and then losing 9-8 in 13 innings. So great season for McNeese State, turning on, winning their conference championship, and then showing a lot of heart there in the Vanderbilt Regional, Nashville Regional, rather.
Making a name for themselves, so to speak, like teams like Coastal Carolina, teams like Stony Brook.
There you go.
You know, they have these you know them, even though they're smaller schools. Maybe even to a lesser extent, but sort of kind of Fresno State, even sort of. These teams right. That Cal State Fullerton on a higher level. But McNeese, you know what? People in Nashville, if McNeese ever pops up on Vandy's schedule in any other sport for some reason or whatever have you, they're going to talk about, man. You remember when that baseball team from McNeese came here?
They made an impression.
Yeah.
Right?
Something to build. What want to talk about, you know, that next level? Because I think the foundation is already there for McNeese. But you want to talk about maybe that first cornerstone on that foundation now for this ball club to start being perennially expected and respected. I think they definitely laid that this weekend.
Another upset was the Morgantown Regional hosted by number 15 seed West Virginia. Duke, that's right, the Blue Devils.
That basketball school?
Yes. They beat Texas A&M 8-5, beat West Virginia 4-0, and then beat Texas A&M again 4-1 to win that regional. It will be Duke at Vandy in the Supers. What is going to be the team combined GPA of those kids? Jesus.
The umpires are going to have to make sure they are on their game for that Duke-Vandy Super Regional.
The Greenville Regional, East Carolina, is still trying to hold on. They'll take on Campbell.
The Camels.
the Camels, East Carolina needs to win two games today to win their own regional. So that could throw a monkey wrench. We saw Louisville lose, but they are not eliminated. They have to play tonight versus Illinois State. Mississippi State took care of business in the Starkville regional. They're waiting to see who wins the Stanford regional. Stanford-Fresno State have to play tonight. North Carolina advanced, and Georgia Tech lost their regional in Atlanta. Auburn won the regional to move on. So, and Southern, big up to them for going to the Starkville regional. They lost to Miami and lost to Mississippi State, but still a tremendous season for winning the SWAC championship. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, Jarrett Rozier, Tiger Details joins us, talks recruiting, talking camps, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, as well as LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Spent a good part of today, obviously, discussing LSU baseball, winning the Baton Rouge Regional. They will now host Florida State in the Super Regionals. We do not know what days as of yet because other regionals are still taking place today and will be wrapped up today. Hopefully sometime later this evening we'll find out exactly when LSU will be playing. They'll either be Friday, Saturday, Sunday for the three-game set, or they'll be Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So we'll get that information out to you as soon as we find out. But we're going to put the baseball talk on hold for a minute, because we're going to bring on our next guest. He joins us every Monday from TigerDetails.com, the one and only Jarrett Rozier. Jarrett, how are you doing this morning, brother?
Hey, man, just as usual, trying to get back into a little bit more normal routine after an interesting weekend. This one was a fun one, going to celebrate Amos Morales' bachelor party out in Vegas, though. So I cannot complain about that.
Yes, Vegas bachelor party. That's all you have to say. That's where I had mine, but we don't have time to go into that on the air, Jarrett. Off there, I'll tell you about the shenanigans that took place. Let's talk about what occurred over the weekend, because recruiting is in your wheelhouse, and the camp circuit is really in your wheelhouse as well, Jarrett. The first big camp weekend of the summer, LSU had linemen on campus this past Saturday, and then had a ton of skill guys there on Sunday, several hundred kids in total. And most of the in-state guys were out there on the way down, to even some youngsters. I want to say STM quarterback Holstein was out there. Como wide receiver Neighbors was out there. A lot of other guys. Tell us, what did you hear about the camp and who kind of really stood out over the weekend?
Yeah, I'm sure some of Amos's other groomsmen were looking at me kind of scratching their head, like, what is this dude doing right now, sitting on the phone in the corner talking to people about football in Louisiana when we're out here, in Vegas. But I was on the phone with a lot of folks that were on hand, in different capacities through the weekend, from some of the athletes themselves, obviously our guy Jimmy Smith, and a few other people. And it seems like it's a pretty good start to what they used to be a big month of June for LSU recruiting. I think we've talked on here before about some of the impact of that early signing period moving a lot of the recruiting process and a lot of the decision-making process up for a lot of top prospects. And so I think we'll see a lot of movement this month from some guys that are trying to make sure that they make a decision before going into their senior year, that they can be confident that their spot in, whether it's LSU class or another top program's class, is safe, and the numbers don't start to fall in a way that has some spots dry up. And so for LSU to have the amount of guys and the amount of high quality prospects on campus this weekend that they had, I think was big. There's going to be another camp in a couple weeks at LSU that last full weekend, I think, of June 21st or 22nd, that weekend. And so some of the guys that weren't on hand, I think they'll still get a chance to get them on campus then. But the guys that were there this weekend, you mentioned the linemen. There was a lot of chatter about how good a lot of the Louisiana defensive linemen looked. Some guys that folks have been following LSU's recruiting class have known about for a while, in Uhai Jaquan Roy, who was one-time commit and still has LSU very much in play. Jacobian Guillory from Ash out there looking as good as anyone. Those two guys, for their size, to come out and show some of their mobility and quickness really seemed to open some eyes. Jalen Lee from Live Oak was a guy that was there for part of the day Saturday, but then had to go leave a little bit early to go to work, which you don't always hear about from top prospects. And a guy, Pat Jenkins from John Arrett in New Orleans, wasn't sure going into the weekend if he was going to make the trip up. Heads up, has a fantastic Saturday, picks up the LSU offer, and so now he's another name to watch as LSU continues to try and recruit those trenches, just like Coach Orgeron and company have been talking about for quite a while now.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, I know some guys from the Lafayette area, from Acadiana, they had some good performances there at the camp. Who kind of stood out from here locally at the LSU camp?
Yeah, you mentioned one of them, who's one of the youngest guys that you heard people talking about all weekend, and that's Eli Holstein, Caleb's little brother. And as well as things have gone for Caleb and his recruitment picking up, and having some high level looks, having Boston College get involved, and the SEC offer from Missouri, and a couple of things in that regard. Eli already at a young age, I mean, 2023 recruiting class guy, already has a lot of attention starting to come his way, and it looks like he will have some big offers sooner than later. And LSU is certainly very aware of him and what he brings to the table, both for the high school team for these next few years, but then his long-term potential. He actually was just getting back from, I was mentioning to you when we were chatting a little bit over the weekend, that 15U national championship team for the Bootlegger 7-on-7 team last weekend. The 15U team won everything, beat a really good Florida team for a national championship, and Eli Holstein had quite a bit to do with that, as did 2021 Como receiver Malik Neighbors, who was one of the strongest receiving performances that weekend, and then came back home and went and visited LSU this weekend and followed that up well, and had a ton of people talking about him and his ability. And so those two guys, among some others, are looking like they're going to be some of the top prospects in the state for these next few years. And LSU hasn't signed a ton of Lafayette area guys in these past 4 or 5 years, but there's some talent coming up over these next few years that make it look like there may be a little bit more of an influx in the next 2, 3, 4 years.
Talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, we didn't have a chance to talk last week because of the holiday. I want to get your thoughts on that. The Pylon 7 on 7 national championships from Atlanta, you briefly mentioned it there. A lot of the Louisiana bootleggers were there. What were some of the highlights from that tournament over in Atlanta?
Yeah, so the older kids ended up a little bit of a disappointing finish for them. It was just kind of a funky weekend, their first time back out playing together in a month. They hadn't played together since Easter weekend. They had a tournament up in Mississippi. And so not the finish they'd hoped for. They certainly felt confident in their ability to go compete for a national title and came up just a couple rounds shy of that. But in that process, Coy Moore, the receiver from Rummel, who we've talked about before, who was one of the the big priority targets in-state for LSU the rest of the way as they try and round out that receiving class for 2020. I think he stood out. Major Burns, another guy we've talked about, defensive back from Madison Prep. He had a little bit more of an up-and-down weekend than he had typically had in tournaments past, but I think overall you took away a lot of positives from it, and certainly he also took away some things that he'll continue to clean up. But I think coming out of the weekend for the Louisiana guys, even for guys like Coy and Major, the big talking point was how impressive those young 15U guys were with Eli and Malik Neighbors and Shaz Preston from St. James, the younger brother of Mississippi State safety Sean Preston Jr. Shaz ends up hauling in a 40-yard touchdown pass from Eli in overtime to walk off the situation. And so to see them having the type of success that they are having at an early age, I think it's really exciting to – obviously, it's 7-on-7, so you're not looking at the linemen, but to feel good about the quality of skill position guys coming through Louisiana for these years to come, I think it was a great way to wind down May and really kick off the summer for a lot of those guys and just some excitement for some Louisiana recruiting moving forward.
Talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, this is camp season. We're in the summer now, and some other camps are coming up, Alabama, Mississippi State. We're also this weekend. Any concern whatsoever about a few guys that maybe didn't go to the LSU camp that LSU is trying to recruit that instead went over to Bama and Mississippi State?
Yeah, I think any time that you have an opportunity to get guys on your campus and working with your coaches and they end up heading elsewhere, particularly to some other SEC rivals, it's certainly not ideal. And there were some guys that I'm sure the Tigers would have preferred to be in Baton Rouge than to be in Tuscaloosa or Starkville. But the LSU staff really is making a big push for that later in June camp that I mentioned, particularly for some of the guys from out of state that didn't make the trip this time around. I think they're expected to be in Baton Rouge later in the month. And I think looking at some of the guys like a Major Burns who ended up making the trip with some of the other guys out to Alabama, Teddy Knox and Joel Williams, who announced yesterday he picked up that Alabama offer, guy who committed to Florida a few weeks back. I think guys like Major that LSU felt like they were in good shape with, they still feel like they're in good shape with. A guy like Joel that was not anticipated to be part of the LSU class, I don't think that this necessarily moved the needle one way or the other for him to miss. Again, you don't want to miss those opportunities, but I think LSU still feels good about their situation overall.
Jarrett, before we let you go, brother, what you got coming to your byline there at TigerDetails.com coming up this week? Let the people know.
Yeah, I'm going to be trying to catch up with some more of these prospects heading into that weekend camp. I had some good features on Jacoby Matthews, the young guy from Ponchatoula, Caleb Anderson, older guy, rising senior from East Feliciana. I've been working on a feature on Quincy Sticks Brown, the wide receiver from Destrehan, so that should be up this week, and just kind of chatting with some of these guys to see what's most interesting and pressing time-wise and try and update on what's going on with them heading into the big month.
Jarrett, appreciate you making time for us, as always, even though you could have just mailed it in and slept in today, brother. I appreciate you making some time for us. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll talk soon.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you, Ray. Happy to start the week with you all, as always.
Jarrett Rozier, TigerDetails.com. My man was out in Vegas for one of his boys' bachelor parties and still was working, keeping tabs on recruits and camps. That's called dedication, man.
Makes me wonder if he did it right.
What, on working or doing the bachelor party?
Both. Because I'm pretty certain that means that the bachelor party maybe didn't do that right. But how right can you cover things like that while also at a bachelor party in Vegas? You know what I mean? You have to commit to one or the other, or they both suffer.
Or you just take time out from one. You'd be like, time out. None of that for right now. I got to handle something. I'll be back to you.
I think the point I'm trying to make is Jarrett Roser more mature than Cody Schutz. I believe is the point we're trying to make.
Oh, bravo, bravo. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll wrap up the second hour right here on 103.7 The Game.
Here's a 1-2. Breaking ball, strike three, outside corner. And you're looking at 21st on the list of all-time strikeouts, Justin Verlander surpassing Cy Young. How about that?
2,807 strikeouts in Verlander's illustrious career, which is still going strong.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. You just heard Justin Verlander pass Cy Young.
I know that name. Cy Young.
Cy Young on the career strikeout list. Justin Verlander's already won himself a Cy Young Award. That's, of course, awarded to the league's best pitcher. He's also won a league MVP. And right now, he looks like a strong candidate to win both this year for the Houston Astros, that he just keeps rolling right along. He's definitely the front runner for the Cy Young. Could he win the MVP? Possibly.
Go ahead and tell the people what's the most important thing about Justin Verlander.
He married Kate Upton.
All right, there you go. And get that out of the way. All right. Continue.
When he gets enshrined,
no, there we go. We're off the rails.
When he gets enshrined into Cooperstown, and it says on his plaque, Cy Young Award winner, American League MVP, World Series champion. He'll probably win another Cy Young. Career strikeouts, all this other stuff. They'll get all this stuff. There has to be a line dedicated on his Hall of Fame plaque. Married Kate Upton. Done. That should either be the first thing or the last thing on the...
You're right. It should either be the lead or the exclamation mark. One of the two.
And let me tell you something.
Oh, here we go.
The Astros. I went last week, as we know, did the game live. Right. Did my show live Thursday morning from downtown Houston. Went to the game Wednesday night, Cubbies. In the team store, there at Minute Maid Park. You know, you're looking at all the stuff. By the way, I got my daughter like a little Orbit stuffed animal. Right, she hates it.
They have the big hat.
She hates it. She hates the Orbit. She's like, he's all green looking.
It's not even an animal.
It's like, oh, no, Daddy. I was like, all right, Daddy all failed.
Right, we tried.
Failed it. You're going through, and they got all the stuff, and they got all the great swag and the old school stuff, and they got the old school jerseys and hats and bats and magnets and everything like that. And they also have pictures throughout the team store, you know, like murals of players and everything like that. They also had a panel on the wall inside the team store of not a player. It was of Kate Upton. Bravo, Houston Astros.
I would claim it as well. I'd claim it as well.
But the Astros did sweep the A's over the weekend, winning the final game 6-4. They're now 40-20 overall, still firmly in first place in the American League West. Verlander's rolling. And this is a team that's doing it without Altuve, without Springer. Correa got hurt. They are limping around. Alex Bregman, though, former LSU star. Yeah, he's good. He's good. He went 2-for-5 in the finale as they beat the A's in 12 innings to secure the sweep. But Breggs, could he win the MVP? Boy, it sure does feel like. I know we've talked a lot on this show about Michael Brantley and the impact that he's had. Great pickup that they were able to poach away from the Cleveland Indians. They have the pitching in place with Verlander and Gerrit Cole, and then, you know, you see what Wade Miley can do. Despite all these injuries, they're still rolling right along, and Alex Bregman looks like, boy, he sure does look like he's trying to win the MVP himself.
He's got a fight with his own teammate, Justin Verlander.
I think it's going to be, it'd be something different. I think Bregman's going to get more weight in the voting process because Altuve, Carrera, and Springer have all been injured. That's going to carry a little bit more weight, so Houston
Verlander,
Astros.
Verlander not looking for that career MVP type thing like Brees. He's got that.
So. No, he's got that in the bag. Astros start a four-game set at Seattle, your early April regular season champions, by the way, the Seattle Mariners. 9:10 first pitch. Astro launch will be right here, 8:30 tonight, first pitch 9:10. You can listen to the Stros right here live on 103.7 The Game. That's going to do it for the second hour. When we come back, Jeff Palermo joins us right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
But it's definitely a boost for you, you know, when you look up in the stands and you see your mom, you see dad, night in and night out, it's really different. I encourage everybody to be in the opportunity to play at home to do it. Deserve the feeling.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
With seafood, scoreless after a half inning, bottom of the first inning, Josh Smith for the Tigers leads it off. First pitch from Josh Lewis is absolutely drilled to right field. Going back, it is gone. One pitch, leadoff batter, and it's 1-0 LSU.
Good morning and welcome to the third and final hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. I'm your host, Raymond Parson III, producer extraordinaire, the man behind the glass, the man behind the man, Cody Schutz. Talked a lot of LSU baseball. I wonder why that is. Oh, that's right, because they just wrapped up winning the Baton Rouge Regional. They will now host the Supers versus a very hot Florida State team. They'll be coming to town. The Seminoles won the Athens Regional, upsetting the number 4 national seed Georgia, not once but twice to do that, and those games weren't even close. We'll talk a little bit about that series and also recapping the weekend that was at Alex Box Stadium with our next guest. He's part of the Louisiana Radio Network. He's also co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, which you can listen to live right here on 103.7 The Game. It's our good friend, Jeff Palermo. Jeff, good morning to you. How are you doing this morning?
Doing well, Raymond. How about yourself?
A little sleepy, as you can imagine, as you are as well. Let's start there, Jeff. I'm curious to get your take on this. LSU is a national brand. LSU is one of the best baseball programs in the history of college baseball. Yet, its final two games of its own regional are not put on television, and they have to make LSU play at 8 o'clock at night on Sunday. What the hell?
You know, it doesn't make sense to me. I think when they set the 8 o'clock start, I think the feeling was they would be playing Arizona State. Arizona State's also a national brand, and then that game would fit well. But when Southern Miss gets in there, which no disrespect to Southern Miss, they're more of a regional brand than a national brand. They decided to go with not to televise the game. Instead, they televised, I think, Mississippi State and Miami. I mean, those are two baseball big time programs. I know there was another game that was televised. And then in the Women's College World Series, they had to play an and-if game. I don't know what happened. Whoever won, you know, one of those games where you didn't know if it was going to be played or not unless a certain team won, and whoever that team was that won. So that knocked LSU from having a chance to be on ESPN2. The thing that I don't get, Raymond, is they got these alternate SEC channels on whoever your TV provider is. but they don't use them. I don't know why they have them. I mean, they use them during football season, but they don't use them here, which makes absolutely no sense, because to me, all you'd have to do is hit a couple of buttons and bring the game up. But, you know, that's the way it is. I would imagine with LSU playing Florida State this weekend, all the games will be on night. All the games are going to be on probably either ESPN or ESPN2. This will be probably the big high-profile super regional series out of the eight.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, before we get to Florida State, which I want to kind of dive into with you, let's recap the weekend. I felt from start to finish that this was the best three-day period or weekend series, if you want to put it in that terms, that we've seen from LSU starting pitching all year. Marceau was terrific on Friday. Cole Henry was really good on Saturday. And then Walker started off very strong on Sunday. Your thoughts? Was this the best we've seen LSU starting pitching all year?
I just think this was the best LSU's played all year. I think this was the number one ranked team that we've been waiting for all season long, and it's finally arrived here. And it starts with starting pitching, though. The big reason for this turnaround and this run that we're seeing is Cole Henry and Landon Marceau finally got healthy, and having those two guys out there pitching as dominant as they've been, especially in this regional, has been the difference. And other guys have contributed, Saul Garza and Brant Broussard, two guys that you thought would have really good seasons for LSU are finally having good seasons. Zach Watson is getting big hits, which you kind of anticipated all season long, and now it's really finally coming along. So I think they're, you know, and Josh Smith is doing what he does. It's finally looking like that team that was ranked number one in the preseason. And again, I think it just starts with Marceau and Cole Henry for these two guys to get healthy as freshman pitchers and just to pitch so well on a big stage. Very impressive. And again, the stage will only get bigger this weekend, but so far, you have to feel really good going into the Super Regional Series that you're going to have Marceau and Cole Henry starting games one and two. There's no reason to change up the weekend rotation. I mean, it should be Marceau in one and Cole Henry in game two, and you save Eric Walker for a game three if necessary. Thing is, they'll be facing what looks to be a Florida State team playing with a lot of confidence and obviously a lot of emotion with this being Mike Martin's final season as their head coach.
We're on with Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network. He's also co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. You can listen to that live right here on 103.7 The Game every week. Jeff, the bats, you mentioned it, how well they've been. You know, Broussard steps up, has his first career home run at LSU. Across the board, Duplantis, Watson, even Cabrera, the bats really came alive over this weekend. But the guy that really stood out to me, Saul Garza, he had a phenomenal regional. And this is a guy that began the season banged up, couldn't even catch because of the injury that he suffered. He looks like he is just maybe the best hitter on this team right now. Your thoughts of what you saw from Garza over the weekend?
He's just locked in, and he came up in two, really three big moments, right? I mean, he hits in the Stony Brook game. He hits the double down the right field line to clear the bases when they were loaded. Saturday night, he hits the base hit up the middle with two strikes on him, infield drawn in, and drives in two runs to break a 4-4 tie. And then last night, hits a huge insurance run where he nearly hits a home run over the right center field wall, hits it right off the top of the wall. And that was a big insurance run. Zach Watson able to score all the way from first. I mean, the guy is just absolutely locked in. And, I mean, I think this coaching staff came very close to just giving up on Saul Garza, that when he was hitting 180 at the end of April or towards the end of April, I think they just thought, you know what, it's just not going to work. It's whatever it may be, you know, they'll probably continue kind of swapping him and Brock Mathis as the catcher. And then he just caught fire. And it kind of started with one home run, and then he hit another. And for power guys, just to hit that one and to get that feeling and get that monkey off your back was big for him, I thought. And his confidence has just been growing and growing and growing. And his ability now to stay off of that slider low and away or breaking ball low and away and just swing at strikes has been huge. And you saw that in the at-bat on Saturday where he hit the single up the middle. I mean, that was just a great at-bat. And then he didn't do anything, didn't try to yank the ball out of the ballpark, just went right back up the middle with it. And he's absolutely locked in. And he's given LSU, I mean, for so long this season, they just got nothing out of the bottom of the batting order. I mean, it was Garza, Mathis, Broussard, Hal Hughes. None of those guys were really producing with any kind of consistency. Now, with Garza batting seven and the other guys in particular getting on base in front of him, I mean, he's a dangerous number seven hitter. It's just, as a pitcher, you're sitting there saying, man, I just got through, the all-time hits leader at LSU, got through Zach Watson, Beloso, freshman who's hit 10 home runs, Cabrera, and then you just can't take a breath. And here comes Saulo Garza. If you hang one, he's going to crush it. And he's been fantastic, absolutely fantastic.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo, the Louisiana Radio Network, here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, 20. Got it done over the weekend. He ties Eddie Furness on Friday, gets an 0-for-4 performance on Saturday, but he had that great moment in the ninth when they intentionally walked him, and the crowd just was vicious with the boos against Southern Miss, and then he ends up stealing a base there in that game. But he breaks through, is now the all-time hit king. Your thoughts on just Duplantis as a player and as a guy that represents the purple and gold?
Well, I think Eddie Furness said it in his tweet very well last night after he broke the record. Just a great ambassador for the LSU program, and him and Eddie Furness are kind of they're the same mold. I mean, they're not guys that are they're not guys that are going to really draw attention to themselves. They're just going to go out there and play and be very consistent and just go about their work. I think one of the more unbelievable stats for Duplantis in his 4 years, he's only missed one game. And now he's also the all-time leader in LSU history in games played as well. He didn't break the record in as many at-bats or as Eddie Furness did. Furness also had the home runs to go along with what he did, and Furness was also SEC Player of the Year and all that kind of stuff. But Duplantis has been a rock-solid guy, and I thought it was fitting for him to break the record with a base hit up the middle because that's what he does. He takes the ball right back up the middle when he's on. And I know he's added the home run ball to his game this year, but Antoine Duplantis is a guy that, as a left-handed hitter, quick to the ball, hit it right back up the middle, and that's what he did to break the record for Eddie Furness. And I'm kind of glad he got it out of the way early. And what's kind of crazy about it, Raymond, is that so much other stuff happened in that game afterwards that him breaking the record is kind of an afterthought, right? I think it was kind of presumed, but, there was so much drama in that game that you almost kind of forgot that he did that early on in the contest.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo, the Louisiana Radio Network, here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, let's focus on this weekend. I know the big storyline in the hype is going to surround Florida State's longtime head coach, Mike Martin, one of the best in the business, the all-time winningest coach in NCAA college baseball. Over, under for you, how many times do you think we're going to see photos on the telecast of him and Skip Bertman together, and how many times is that going to be brought up during the whole Super Regionals?
Well, it's going to be the huge storyline. For what Florida State has done here, there were some people wondering if they would even make a regional.
Right.
And they just flat-out crushed Georgia in two consecutive games, a team that I thought was one of the best in the country. And And there's something going on there with Georgia. This is the second time they've been a top eight national seed, second year in a row, top eight national seed, and they've lost in their own regional. I mean, imagine if that happened here in Baton Rouge, they'd be burning the place down. But yeah, it's the huge storyline, and you have Palmieri, who's won a bunch of games, Mike Martin, who's won over 2,000 games, but has never won a national championship, which is amazing, considering how good he's been. And they've had a lot of tough luck in the postseason, where they've lost games in their regional, where they've lost regionals, they've lost super regionals, and they've done a lot of it at home. And here they go on the road and they just crush Georgia. And man, they got to feel like they got a chance to come into Baton Rouge and beat LSU. And LSU's lost super regional series before, and the teams they've lost to have really come in with a strong belief. Coastal Carolina, Stony Brook, a strong belief that they're not going to come into Baton Rouge and be intimidated by it. And I would think Florida State's going to have that same belief. They're going to love this atmosphere in Baton Rouge. You know, they don't got to travel too far. So it's great. I think it's cool that LSU and Florida State are playing. I mean, those are schools that really should be playing each other more in all sports. It's not, like I say, not very far. There should be kind of a little bit of a rivalry, but you don't really see LSU and FSU playing a lot of sports, but you get it this weekend, and looking forward to it. And really, the last few Super Regionals now at the Box have been some pretty great storylines. A few years ago, it was UL and Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
2 years ago, it was Andy Canizero and Mississippi State coming, and now it's Mike Martin and Florida State. So for guys like us, makes it easy to really to pump up the series. And I know fans are going to get tired about hearing about Mike Martin this and Mike Martin that, but guy's a legendary coach, even though he's never won a national championship. And he's got a team that's playing really confident in themselves, but so is LSU. I mean, you get the sense that the Tigers feel like they can't lose. And even when Southern Miss took that lead yesterday, you had a feeling LSU was going to make a run at them and come back and retake the lead, and that's exactly what they did.
One last question before we let you go, Jeff. Major League Baseball draft, first two rounds is tonight, picks 1 through 78, and then the rest of the rounds will be wrapped up Tuesday and Wednesday. We know last year the LSU players weren't thrilled about where they were drafted, and that led them to come back, the Plantis, Watson, Hess, others. Once the draft is all said and done, before Florida State comes to town, in your opinion, how many guys are going to be drafted, and how many guys do you think are going to be drafted pretty high?
That's a good question. You know, Zach Katz is an interesting case. You know, I was actually reading an article this weekend about how major league teams are not really buying into college relievers, right? There's been drafting college relievers high. So Zach Katz, when the decision was made to switch him from starter to reliever, I think that hurt his draft stock. I mean, I think major league teams are looking for starters, and then of course, if it don't work out in pro ball, they move him to reliever. But basically, the article I read by Baseball, I think it was Baseball America, that stated about how guys that are drafted high as college relievers don't really pan out at all. And so it's almost kind of like the running back in football, right? What's the point of drafting one high when a lot of times it doesn't even pan out, injuries or whatever, ineffectiveness, whatever it may be. So it'll be interesting to see what Zach Hess goes. Interesting to see where Josh Smith goes. Zach Watson is another guy. Again, you know, Zach had a good year, but it wasn't a great year. I don't think you're going to see too many guys drafted really that high. If a guy like Cole Henry or Landon Marcel was eligible for this draft, maybe those guys probably would be drafted a lot higher. I mean, this is Antoine Duplantis, does it help his stock that he's hit some more home runs this season? Maybe, but he's a senior. So major league teams don't really need to have to worry about drafting him early because he doesn't have a decision to make. So I don't I don't think you're going to see a lot of guys drafted that high, but I still think Hess is going pro. We'll see what Josh Smith decides to do. I think he, I mean, remember, he, you know, he's been around, you know, it's 3 years. I mean, it'll be interesting. I'll say that. It'll be interesting. I mean, I don't think as far as your position players, I mean, I don't think you see any major league future players there. I really don't. Maybe Josh Smith, maybe Daniel Cabrera, maybe Zach Watson, but there's no surefire major league guys like that 2009 team where you knew there were some, and you look at it, there's still a bunch of guys that are still in the majors from that team.
Right. Jeff, appreciate your insight as always, brother. Get you some rest today, and we'll see you out there at the box this weekend for the Supers. Enjoy the rest of your week, my friend.
All right. Same to you, Raymond. Appreciate it.
Jeff Palermo, Louisiana Radio Network, joining us there on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, breaking down LSU winning the Baton Rouge Regional and giving us a taste of the Super Regional versus Florida State. We got to hit a break. More RP3 and Company coming up after this on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you are a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood. But sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig, tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service, and to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game reminds you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Programming reminder, Jordy Hultberg Show with Uncle Jordy from 2 to 4 today, followed by 3 hours of the good brother himself, Ben Love, host of Bumper to Bumper Sports from 4 to 7. Astro launch will begin at 8:30 tonight. First pitch, 9:10. Strohs will begin a 4-game series at the Seattle Mariners, the early April regular season champs. You can listen to all that live right here on 103.7 The Game. Also, the weekly reboot podcast by Ben Love is up on the website. Make sure to go check it out. Ben talks about sustaining excellence in modern college sports. Of course, he brings up LSU. Got to hit a break. Louisiana wrap-up up next right here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game.
Let's put the spotlight on the boot. It's time for the Louisiana wrap-up.
We got a little under 30 minutes left in this edition of RP3 and Company, and we're going to spend the first portion of those last 30 minutes with a little Louisiana wrap-up. We're coming to you live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. And on this trip around the boot, we're actually going to leave the boot at first, but you know how RP3 does it. He's going to find a way to link this story back to Louisiana. I have no doubt, the utmost faith in my man, RP3. Why are we in Memphis?
Well, first of all, why wouldn't you be in Memphis?
You're not wrong. Beale Street, it's all great and all that, but why are we there?
Some good barbecue.
Specifically.
Well, a raging Cajun. That's right.
You ill.
Jakinen Gant, all Sunbelt Conference Defensive Player of the Year, all Sunbelt Conference First Team honoree, great shot blocker, great dunker. He was sensational his 2 years as a starter for the UL Raging Cajuns. He got a workout over the weekend with the Memphis Grizzlies, who hold the number two overall pick. Now, look, the Grizz are not going to be taking Jakinen Gant with the number two overall pick, but they do have other picks, especially in the second round. So the Grizzlies hosted a closed workout for draft prospects on Saturday. And among those attending were Jakinen Gant of UL, Matt Mooney of Texas Tech, Kenny Wooden of Oregon, some other big names Shaq Buchanan of Murray State was there. So is this a possibility that they draft Jakinen Camp maybe in the second round? Or maybe they worked him out to see if they could sign him maybe to a G League contract, stash him away that way. But still, good sign for the former Raging Cajun star that he's getting an opportunity getting closed workouts with an NBA franchise. So congratulations to Jakinen Gant getting that opportunity to show the Grizzly front office people what he could possibly do for them moving forward.
I mean, only one can hope that we'll see a former Raging Cajun in an NBA uniform that's not named Elfrid Payton.
That's correct.
That's what we can hope for. That would show a lot of love to Bob Marlin as well, showing him he's putting guys in the NBA. Sean Long, no slouch either as well, where he's playing.
He played in the NBA, but now he's re-upped. He's playing down
New Zealand, right, I believe?
He played for New Zealand, now he's playing for a team in the same league, but he's playing for an Australian team this year. We talked about it last week's show.
There you go. Bob Marlin putting some professional basketball players out into the world. Well done, sir. We're going to continue on with the Louisiana wrap-up. We're making our way sort of, kind of, back towards Louisiana, but we're going to take a bit of a detour and head farther west, and let's make a stop in Oklahoma City. I got a feeling I know what this one is about. OKC, RP3.
Alabama Crimson Tide fell short of advancing to the championship round of the Women's College World Series in Oklahoma City as they fell to Oklahoma once again.
Everyone loses to Oklahoma, it seems. It's ridiculous.
Now, they beat Oklahoma to push a game.
That's the if-necessary game, I guess.
Right, but then they lost that game. So Oklahoma's going to play UCLA, the two top teams in the country, will face off for the women's championship. But Bailey Hemphill, former St. Thomas More Cougar, Lafayette's own, she has rewritten the record books for the Crimson Tide. She had a home run over the weekend at the College World Series. That makes her the new Alabama single-season leader and also tied her as the SEC single-season record holder for most home runs in a season. She's also Alabama's new single-season RBI leader as well. So even though Alabama fell short of winning the Women's College World Series, Bailey Hemphill, who had a tremendous season as it already, and we talked about that with Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser on Friday's show because he wrote a big piece on Bailey Hemphill, but the former STM Cougar just rewriting the record books once again. Single-season home run leader, single-season RBI leader there for the Crimson Tide. So congrats to the former STM Cougar.
She's been getting a lot of shout-outs lately. What a wonderful run to end. Maybe
tremendous, you know, player.
End of season there, but not a career for a young lady. We've got one more stop to make, and now we will officially enter back into the boot. We are here in Louisiana, Raymond, and we are talking about something in Baton Rouge. I bet it's got to do with college baseball. Go Raymond, the capital city.
Well, the NCAA released its all-regional lacrosse team.
No, is that right? I didn't even know LSU had a lacrosse team. How about that?
No, the all-Baton Rouge,
the all-diving team. Oh,
yes, okay. The all-diving team. The all-table tennis team. No, the 2019 NCAA Baton Rouge Regional all-tournament team was released late last night, as expected, with LSU winning the regional. They clean up. Here are your honorees that wear the purple and gold. Both pitching spots went to LSU. Cole Henry, Landon Marceau, both freshmen. Ooh, the future looks bright for the Tigers on the mound. Saul Garza took the catching spot. Josh Smith, shortstop. Zach Watson, outfielder. And Cade Beloso, DH. So they had a total of six players named to the all-tournament team. And Saul Garza was also named co-most outstanding player with Gabe Montenegro of Southern Miss. So congratulations to the Tigers for not only winning the regional, but for those individual Tigers for earning all tournament team honors.
Yeah, I don't know. I would have to go into like more detail looking at it, but there's a name on there, Mandrell, the big guy, the big cat that's going to go in the top two rounds for Southern Miss. He's one of the outfielders. It's Nick something, right? Is it Mandrell or I don't forget, maybe I'm saying it wrong. It's one of the outfielders though for Southern Miss.
Okay.
He was their big thumper. He's got 20, I think, six home runs or something.
Matt Wallner.
Thank you. He's the big guy. I don't know. I maybe would have seen Antoine Duplantis in ahead of him. I know, you know, you have to kind of spread the love a little bit.
Well, a little bit. I mean, Stony Brook didn't get anyone.
Yeah, exactly. So that's fair, but... And I know he...
And Arizona State only had two guys. Yeah.
And Wallner had a home run in the regional, and Duplantis didn't. And maybe that's what the difference is, that split those two hairs. But, I mean, LSU played Southern Miss twice in that series, and Wallner got one big hit, I think, in both games, but he had multiple opportunities in those games, and There was something that I wanted to point out to you about the LSU baseball game. It did not feel like Southern Miss. Like, there you go. Gabe Montenegro is the co-most outstanding player in the tournament for Southern Miss. He was nowhere on their radar coming into the – he was just a position guy, just playing the game, you know, not doing anything special or nothing like that. And he came to life. I just feel like LSU did a good job of not letting the guy that everyone thinks is going to beat you. They got around the Matt Wallners. They got – you know, when you go into the MLB and – you see, don't let Mike Trout beat you. Don't let Bryce Harper beat you. When you play the Cubs, it's pitch around Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo if you can. It's so, and I feel like LSU did a very good job of that. And maybe it has something to do with more comfortability between the pitcher, the catcher, and Alan Dunn the later in the season it gets now. And also, you know, there's more one-on-one in between games. You're not going home. There's more hanging out with the team. I don't know. There's a lot of moving pieces here, but I'm pleased to see LSU not just only winning, but noticing where the threats are coming from the other team and not letting the other guy's best player beat you. If you're going to get beat by someone else. And so far that hasn't happened.
And they did it. Yeah, they did a tremendous job on that. You know, it would have been seen getting Duplantis there would have been nice. You know,
I have
those
no
outfield
arguments.
Spots. Would you have rather... See, and I think Duplantis would have been on that team, but Watson had the homers.
Right, Watson hit a home run.
He had two in 3 days.
And then Waldner, the guy for Southern, also had a home run, I guess, in the Stony Brook, or maybe Arizona State game. He hit a home run, too.
And then Montenegro was the best hitter of anyone, probably the whole.
Most likely. He was 7-for-9 or 8-for-10 yesterday.
Something stupid.
Just yesterday in the two games. So, like, shout out to that kid. He did very well. So, I mean, I'm not trying to complain because at this point, but it just
but once again,
stuck
but,
out
but,
to me.
It's a good point because Duplantis is, we've talked about it a ton on this show. Very under the radar, right? This is a guy that came up with big hits throughout the weekend, doesn't get on the all-tournament team. I don't know if it's because of the personality or just the way he conducts himself, or as Jeff Palermo told us, our earlier guest from the Louisiana Radio Network, you know, how fitting was it that he broke the record with a single up the middle? Like, just routine baseball play. You look at Antoine, you look at Twani, he's a baseball player. He's not going to overpower you. He doesn't have blistering speed or anything like that. He's just what you call a ball player. And I think because he's just a ball player and he goes about his business, he's not flashy, he's not demonstrative, he has a lot of humility, he jokes all the time about how he's not the best athlete in his own family. You know, he's a quiet dude. I think that works against him a lot of times. And I think we're going to look back on Twani and we're going to go, man, we kind of took him for granted a little bit. I think he's going to be one of those players where it's going to be like 5 years down the road, you're going to be like, oh, man, you remember just how damn good Antoine Duplantis was? And we'll be like, yeah. And be like, oh, you realize he only earned all conference honors once. He's the all-time hit leader for LSU. Like, I think it's going to be one of those things where we are not really going to appreciate the former Mighty Lion until years down the road.
Jake Mangum stealing a little bit of his thunder too, but that's to take nothing away from Jake Mangum. He's doing the exact same thing. Yeah, there's nothing to take away from him, but just so happens that what are the odds that, you know, when an LSU Tiger is chasing the all-time SEC hits record, which also happens to be held by an LSU Tiger, that this cat from Mississippi State would show up and be like, hold my beer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What are the odds of that? Like, you know, you got this LSU guy going, I'm going to catch this other dude from LSU from back in the Gorilla Ball era. And again, Mississippi State's over there. Hold my beer.
But once again, it just goes to that whole thing about Duplantis is just kind of under the radar.
And I think Jake Mangum kind of feels, he seems like the same type of player. Yeah. I don't know. We were talking earlier about, really at the end of the first hour, we discussed alcohol sales, beer and wine. Coming
yes, we
to,
threw it up as a Twitter poll question.
Right.
Well, will you still be sneaking in alcohol sales?
I just want to throw out there. We've got 23 votes in, early results. 65%. Which way you think that 65% is leaning, Ray?
They're still sneaking in alcohol.
They're still sneaking the liquor into the Tiger games. They need their captain. They need their crown. They need their
Uncle Jack.
Or their college students. Maybe it's Taka. Who knows?
Oh.
Yeah, you're right. You want to do it fast. Everclear is really, if you really want to get. No, that's bad. You shouldn't do that.
Bad memories.
But 65% of people are still sneaking their liquor into Tiger games.
Keep going to the 1037 The Game Twitter account. Vote on our poll question. Let us know what you think. Even though they can now sell alcohol inside the stadiums and arenas, will you still be sneaking it in? LSU fans, we need you to be honest. Look, no one knows that you vote on these. Okay.
Completely anonymous.
That's right. So just, yay. Be honest.
All I have is the number of votes. I have no idea who said what.
We're not going to call you out.
If you would like to leave a comment, let us know.
Now, then that's different. That's different. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we're going to wrap up today's show. It's been tremendous so far. We're going to finish strong right here on 103.7 The Game.
Never judge a book by its cover.
That's right. The era of the dad bod strikes again. We're listening to RP3 and Company
right
here.
Long live Ruiz! Long live Ruiz! Somewhere Alan Michael in the great wrestling ring in the sky is turning over on the turnbuckle right now. The hugest Anthony Joshua fan I know is Alan Michael. I don't know how he feels today.
I'm sure he feels great. Listening to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. There's a new heavyweight champion of the world, Andy Ruiz Jr. He beat Anthony Johnson, who held not one, not two, but three of the belts. And just, first of all, dad bod, you saw all the things on Twitter over the weekend. A real-life King Hippo from Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, or 23 years after the original bout, Homer Simpson gets his revenge against Mike Tyson, because the Simpsons had a great episode where he fought Mike Tyson. This guy is a big fella. He's built like your boy here, the host, RP3 and Company.
You might be in better shape.
I may be in better shape than the heavyweight champion of the world.
You don't punch as hard as him, though.
There's also guys that say that he looks like Butterbean, the former boxer and fighter. Here's the interesting thing about this. There's a couple of interesting things I want to touch on before we wrap up today's show. He sealed his fate as a fill-in fight to Joshua. Ruiz did. And becomes the first boxer of Mexican heritage to become heavyweight champion, by the way. He fill in fight to Joshua by contacting promoter Eddie Hearn on an Instagram direct message after Joshua's original opponent failed multiple drug tests. So this guy was like, I'm just going to DM the promoter and get my, and they're like, well, hell, we can't get a guy not to pass a drug test. So the fat boy with all the tattoos that's built like Butterbean and King Hippo, come on down. We'll give you some money. And that guy whooped Joshua's ass. Just whooped him.
You know what we call that on the street, Ray? That's hustle. And your boy here, I don't even, with Andy Ruiz, he's got some hustle in him. That's
good for
all
him.
That is.
Biggest, there weren't even bets in Vegas on this.
You have to sell yourself.
It was that much of an underdog. The biggest heavyweight upset since Buster Douglas knocked out Mike Tyson. That's what we're talking about here. I know the fight game is off and people don't follow it like they used to, but a huge deal.
But now there's a fat guy, champ.
Joshua was supposed to fight Wilder, Deontay Wilder, who is an absolute bad
squad.
Man. That ain't happening now. Okay,
I want to see Ruiz and Wilder.
Oh, Wilder. You know what? You know what's going to happen. Wilder's going to destroy
Dance
Ruiz.
Dance circles around this dude.
Oh, but also, what this also proves, and a lot of people say that Joshua just has a glass jaw, and that's why he's been dodging Deontay Wilder for as long as he has, because he has been dodging him and not taking a fight with Wilder. Well, Wilder will get the fight with Ruiz, because Ruiz will get a huge payday now, too.
Yeah, he won. He doesn't matter.
Here you go. But this is what Anthony Joshua tweeted out back on March 21st of this year. A picture on his Twitter account, at Anthony F. Joshua. It has a blue check mark. It's the real deal. Would you like to know what the picture is of Cody?
Of course.
It's him inside a boxing club next to the ring posing with Drake. The line says, bout to break the curse. Hashtag June 1st. The curse of Drake strikes again. This guy was like, I'm going to take it on. I'm going to break the curse. And you know he's thinking, I'm going to fight this tomato can.
And it's the right, it was the perfect sport to do it in because no one's even paying attention.
Ah, that's what you get. Don't hang out with Drake.
So what you're telling me is if the Raptors weren't already screwed, they never had a shot.
About to break the curse. And people went back and looked at it and it just started trending. Like Rachel Nichols was like, oh.
You got knocked to the ground in a professional boxing fight. Four different times by a guy that I am almost positive I could beat in a foot race.
First of all, big up to all the big fellas out there.
Oh, yeah, no, shout out to this dude, yeah.
I was thinking about starting a diet today to get back down. So RP3 is no longer nearing the three bills mark. But I just saw a guy that's built like me or worse shape than me just win the heavyweight championship of the world. Time to go to the fried chicken buffet.
We're going to Popeye's. Yeah, that's what I said. We're going to Popeye's.
Give me some extra macaroni and cheese, some mashed potatoes and gravy. We're going to do it up right. Because you got
all
him,
the cornbread.
All the cornbread. You got DC, our boy.
Yes.
The king of dad bods out there. Hey, man, you don't need a six-pack to be a champ. Straight up.
Proof.
So nothing but love to Ruiz. Seriously, congrats to him. Because even though he might have got the fight because he DM'd the promoter on Instagram.
That's hustle.
He hustled his way to get the fight. He hustled to get a payday. And you know what? He outworked the other cat. And he's now heavyweight champ. And no matter what happens to him moving forward, he's always going to have what happened over the weekend, and he's always going to be the heavyweight champ. So big up to him, seriously.
It's like when, you know, wrestling, we understand it's scripted, right? But it's like when that underdog guy is like, oh, man, the champ or whoever is like, oh, man, it's just a job or no big deal. I'm not going to think about it. And then they give you that little hope that, like, oh, they get a little flurry in the match where the underdog guy, he might actually win. And then, no, okay, no, we know how this is going to go. The big guy comes and crushes him. But in real life, when it's actual hand-to-hand physical combat, and you step into somewhere with another human being, and you already think, this guy's got nothing on me, I don't need to bring even my B game to beat him, then odds are you've already lost. And we saw that on the grandest scale with this fight here, because there's no other reason that Joshua loses this fight other than he thought there was no chance he could lose. Just show up and win. And that's what happens when you do that in a combat sport. You get knocked out.
Yeah, and he wasn't ready. He thought this cat was a tomato can that he was just going to be able to beat up. And even before he got knocked out there, he punched Ruiz a couple of times in the face. Didn't matter. New champ. Terrific show. I want to thank Jarrett Rozier from Tiger Details joining us today. I want to thank Jeff Palermo from the Louisiana Radio Network for joining us. I want to thank you, Cody Schutz. Doing a terrific job, as always. That'll do it for us today. Up next, Dan Patrick. You're listening to 103.7 The Game.